No, I remember when, I don't remember many masses when Grandpa died, but I remember that when Dad died, we had maybe 7 or 8 masses for him during that 1 year.
At different times?
Of course, now that's all gone, see? They don't use that frame anymore. They still have masses for the dead in all the Catholic churches. But you see, it's just like an ordinary, mass, okay? And years ago, you know, you could have a mass said for a dead body for about 50 cents or a dollar. Then, as time went on, you know, with new churches and so on, higher cost of living and so on, the masses went to $2, and now it costs $5, you know, to have a mass for the dead, see? But no matter what church you go to, I think it's about the same price all over, see? Well, some people, you know, have what they call, after a certain number of years that a person is dead, when the money that they use, when the money that they picked up at the offering, see, is gone, see? Then they know they have what they call anniversary, see? They have a mass, I say, every year at the time of the death, see? Now, you know, I've always maintained that practice. I have an anniversary mass for all my relatives, that is, family relatives, see? Mother, dad, brothers and sisters that are gone, see? I have an anniversary for them every year, see? I list the whole names together, you know, and generally, I donate that money on All Souls Day. All Souls Day is the day after All Saints Day, which is always the 1st of November. And All Poor Souls Day is the 2nd of November, see? So the priest, you know, then, whatever or wherever I make the donation, whether it's in Corpus Christi or St. Mary of the Snow or St. Francis in Brussels or one abroad here in town. And I have a daughter, you know, that's buried over in Princeton, and I have a nursery for her every year too at St. John the Baptist in Princeton.
About the pilgrimages that you made to the chapel at Robinsonville?
Well, that was a kind of an unusual custom. People had faith, and the people didn't have much in the way of medicine. So they had the idea that fate would cure a good many diseases, which it does. Okay? And so that was the idea back of that. Most of the people went to the chapel on St. Mary's Day, because that shrine was in honor of St. Mary that had been built by the sister Adele Brees. See? And on St. Mary's Day, which is the 15th of August, the people of the neighborhood always went to the chapel and pray to Saint Mary. But the main idea was that if they had any infliction, of any kind, their trip to the chapel would be removed by their faith that they had in this in the saint. See?
Did that work for anybody that you knew?
Well, it must have worked because, you know, the old chapel, I remember the old chapel, the old building, had an altar in the back like they have the one now, but there was a bunch of crosses that was hanging on the wall. See? That people had gone in there on crutches and hadn't been cured, you know, and left the crutches there as a remembrance of what had happened, see? And I remember my sister, you know, when her two son-in-laws were drafted out there. They both were married and they both had children. And I remember her going to the chapel in her older days, you know, praying that the boys wouldn't have to go to the army, you know. Whether that helped or not, I don't know. One had to go and the other one didn't have to go. But that was the idea of having faith, you understand? But in addition to that, you know, to exemplify this faith, see, some people had built those little chapels, you know, along the wayside, see? Now there was a woman by the name of Gerondale, she married a Jaden. And she was afflicted with some kind of disease, and they built one of the little chapels in honor of St. Rock. Now St. Rock, I wrote a history of St. Rock. Now St. Rock was supposed to have been born with a cross on his body. See? And they claimed that signified some power that he had over diseases, especially contagious diseases. Well, St. Rock, you know, had a tough time. He cured many of the sick in Italy, miraculously. And then he made several pilgrimages to Rome to visit the Pope. And on the way home in one of those pilgrimages, he was taken prisoner and died in prison. Well, he was wounded one time and was saved by his dog. See, there's the picture, see? Shows the dog there carrying him a loaf of bread. Well, that chapel was built on the outskirts of the hamlet there of Brussels. And it passed hands, you know, from Jaden to Gerondale, from Gerondale to Wattier, my sister's husband. And then from there it went to Malcor. Then Malcor donated the chapel to Belgian Club. And today the building rests on the lot at Namur. See? We're trying to make something out of that, you know, but seems they can't get anybody interested in it.
Did your family have a chapel?
My family didn't have no chapel, no.
Why?
But there was another chapel built, you know, in Gardiner, right west of where St. Joseph's Church was. And that was built by a Destry. A fellow by the name of Joe Destry was a mason by trade. And somewhere or the other, he had one good eye and one bad eye. And he got hot lime into his good eye. See? And he feared losing his eyesight. So he built a chapel in honor of St. Helen, who was the patron saint for sight, see? Now the story is that St. Helen, this young girl, you know, was born blind. See? That's the story of St. Helen. She was born blind, and upon being confirmed, the Lord restored her sight. See? So that's what we get out of those things, you know.
Did you ever go to the chapels when you were younger?
You mean at Robinsonville here? Oh, yeah.
No, the small wayside chapel.
Oh, yeah, we went to those chapels, yeah.
And what would you do when you were there?
Well, we prayed. Yeah. We prayed, you know, for whatever. I remember going there one time with a toothache. Right? With a toothache, yeah. Because the Joe Destry was also a kind of a doctor, you know. He would have prayers to say over a toothache, and then the toothache would disappear, see. Well, you see, that was just a matter of faith. And then you thought of the prayer and you forgot about your toothache. Yeah, that's the way it was. Eh? No, there was another one built by a Jigo family, but I don't know what that was. See? And then there were two more of those little places built between Namur and Brussels. One was called Chapel, Poland. Poland was with a Baudouin, and the other one was Chapel Bayard. Two families, a Bay family and a Baudouin family. They had built those two chapels. Now, I don't know anything about the Poland chapel, but Chapel Bayard was Saint I forget the name of the saint, but the saint was a saint that had power over storms, rain, lightning, thunder, and so on, see? You know, and during the summer when we used to get these storms, rainstorms and lightning and thunder, that's what they used. They went to their chapel and prayed. I forget what the name of the saint is.
What was the formal Catholic Church's attitude towards the chapels?
The chapels? Oh, they were very respected, yeah. Today you still see, you know, a lot of people driving by Catholic churches and these chapels. Whenever they approach the chapel of the church, they make the sign of the cross, see? Yeah, they respect that, too. And I suppose some proper, you know, invoke a few words in the way of prayer or something. It's silent, you know what I'm saying? You don't hear them say anything, but I imagine they do that now. Yeah, but that's the way it was brought up. You know, my son always does that. My son always makes the sign of a cross whenever he goes by a Catholic church.
What was your Easter celebration like?
Easter celebration? Well, Easter celebration was something peculiar too, you know. The main idea back of Easter celebration was resurrection, see? Resurrection, confession, communion, and the beginning of a new life. You forget the old life, forget the old leaven, bring in a new leaven, and you start a new life. Your past sins were forgiven, understand? And you begin a new life without any sins. See? Well, that was the main idea, that still is the main idea of Easter, see? Resurrection of the Lord. But the custom, the Belgian custom, was that to signify life, that they used to have eggs. See? Eggs, when you hatch an egg, see, that's new life, isn't it? Well, that's what they had, you know. But you see, what they did then, they had eggs. They used to boil the eggs in coffee. They give it a different color so that the kids would know, you know, or the kids probably would realize, well, that's not a chicken egg, see, because chicken eggs are always white, see. This was a different kind of an egg because it was colored. Later on, then they had colored eggs, but as long as we were on the farm, we had eggs boiled in coffee, see. And Easter morning when we'd get up, then mother had gotten up during the night, you know, and boiled those eggs and then put the eggs around the house, or in the house, and kind of hid them. So we had to have an egg hunt, you understand? Don't do that. Well, there was more to that than that, you know. A setting hen in Belgium is called a cluck. See? You know what a cluck is? Well, the setting hen is a cluck. And the name given to the church bells is cluck, see? So on Friday, on Good Friday, they always told us that the church bells would be silent until Sunday. Resurrection Day. The clocks would not toll or would not peal because they told us that the clocks were gone to Rome. There's no bell, no nothing at all, see? And on Sunday morning, the clock came back, see? And we found our eggs, see? Because the clock, you know, had been around laying the eggs with us, see? Our chickens, see? Yeah, that was a kind of, but nowadays, I don't know whether they, well, they still have that Friday. From Friday until Sunday, there are no ringing of the church bell in the Catholic Church. No.
Yeah, yeah. How about New Year's?
New Year's? Well, New Year's, you know, there wasn't much doing on New Year's. The thing I remember most about New Year's was always a time to make waffles. That's a waffle eating day. For the church holiday, we went to church, then I had waffles, and then used to go around the neighborhood and wish each other a Happy New Year. Yeah, Happy New Year.
Did every family?
Well, they had, most of them had the two together, you know, Merry Christmas, Joyeux Noël, and Happy New Year was Bonne Année, see, around the neighborhood. But the main thing was this, when you get stop at a house, you know, they say, well, come on in and have a waffle. See?
Must have eaten a lot of waffles.
No, they didn't eat a lot of waffles, you know. And the waffles were prepared with these old waffle irons. And they had boiled milk with cinnamon and sugar. And you'd soak your waffle in that, you know. See?
Were they special waffle irons?
No, these old waffle irons, you know, they were different than what you have today, see? The old waffle iron turned up and down, see? But the turn was into the fire, see? So in order to make a waffle, you'd have to have a good fire and then have coals settle on the bottom of the stove, see? So that your iron could turn, see? Today, you turn the iron, but, you know, today you turn the waffle, see? And those times, you know, you turn it this way, see? It went way around, see?
And St. Nicholas was an important day with the Belgians.
Yeah, St. Nicholas was, that was a person that brought in our presents, see? St. Nicholas. You know, we were told to get things ready for Santa, so we always left a piece of bread or some cookies on the table, and we always left some feed, some grain, you know, on the doorstep. For his deer. Mm-hmm. And then when we got up in the morning, we got our present. Sweater, a pair of mittens, shoes or something, you know. Well, no toys though, always something, you know, that had value, something we could wear, something we could appreciate. See? That was our St. Nicholas Day. And once in a while, we had an old fellow by the name of Nicholas Simon. We'd always have a shower for him, you know. We'd go and visit him, see? And at about that same time, too, St. Catherine's Day. We always used to go and visit our old aunt, our St. Catherine, on St. Catherine's Day. You know? And of course, Christmas. There was nothing Christmas, no Christmas trees. No Christmas lights, just church. That was what.
And for local elections, there's something about a maypole?
Yeah. You know, when the officers of the township or the town were elected, you know, they had to pay a little something, see, for being elected, little reward or something. And so most of the people that were elected either made home brew, or if they didn't have home brew, they would buy, you know, a little keg of commercial beer, see? And the young men of the community would get in the swamps and cut what they call a maypole, a spruce or balsam, you know, maybe 20, 30, 40 feet high. And then they strip all the branches off and the bark, and just leave a few branches on the top. See? And they put a little flag on top of there. And then they'd plant that in front of the officer's house. See? You know, so that people would know when they go by that house and see that maple that he was an elected office. See? He was an official of the town. See? But of course, it was done by these young people, because then they would get this keg of homebrew or keg of commercial beer for a celebration. See? Mm. And that, those maples stayed up all year. See?
Yeah.
Just, you know. Of course, it had to come down every year because the top of the tree, you know, the top of the pole dried up. See?
One time you spoke of Belgian attitudes towards mortgages.
Towards what?
Mortgages.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Belgian custom, you know, that the Belgians in Belgium and the Belgians that came here didn't believe in mortgages. Because they were afraid that a mortgage, you know, wouldn't be paid. Then the property would be lost, see? So the custom was, among the Belgian people, that if you had, say, 5 or 6 children, see? They never would divide up the property. Because if they divided up the property, say one boy got the property, see? And say he had to give $1,000 to each of the other 4 children, see? That meant that he had to have a mortgage of $4,000, see? And if he couldn't pay the $4,000, you know, the thing was foreclosed, see? And so instead of having that thing, that division of property, you understand, either the youngest son or the oldest child, you know, inherited the property, see? And the other one would get almost nothing. They would get something, but not on a mortgage basis, see? Now, Uncle Ziri, my mother's oldest brother, stayed with the old folks, see? And he inherited the farm and the property along with it, see? But he never had any mortgage on that, you know? The other children, my mother and her sister and the other 2 boys, you know, had no chance of getting any property, see? Well, later on, you know, when Uncle Ziri got to be pretty well fixed on his land, he got the property and he made the money. Well, he gave my mother a cow, see, as a share, see? And he gave Aunt Nora a cow, see, as a share, see? You know, so they'd have something, see? But in good many cases, you know, some got a dollar or 2, you see? And the other, either the youngest boy or the oldest boy or the oldest daughter got the property, see? That's inheritance from Belgium, see? The same thing with my mother. when my mother inherited the property from my dad. There never was any mortgage on that plan, you know. She sold the farm to brother, August. No mortgage. See? Well, when August got to be grown up, you know, well, he was grown up when he bought the farm, see? So August got one farm, the older brother got one farm, Bill, Willie, the younger brother got another farm, see? We had two farms at that time, see? Well, Willie, you know, the brother, William, gave Eli and I each $500. That's all we got out of it, see? He got the other farm that was worth about $6,000, see? But no mortgage, you know what I'm saying? And that's what we got out of it, see? And Eleanor got a 40 acres of... Eleanor got a house that mother had built in Brussels. That was worth $1,000. And Alice, the younger sister, got 40 acres of land, which was worth about another $1,000, see? But you see, there never was any mortgage on that end of that property.
What about attitudes towards taxes?
Taxes? Well, the Catholics were, they paid taxes. They never begrudged taxes. No, no. There was some begrudging on paying taxes, especially school taxes, you know, by people that didn't have any children. They didn't see why they should pay taxes when they didn't have any children, see? Well, among the Belgians, you know, most of them had big families, see? There's quite a number of children in each family, and they kind of welcomed taxes because, you see, that paid for their education, see? That was the big thing at that time, you know. It was education like it is today, see? Taxes were very much in those days, you know. Very, very little money was paid in taxes, see. But the most of it went for school taxes, see. And like in our case, you know, we had seven children in the family, see. And the education was paid by taxes as well as not only by our family, but by a family that didn't have children that owned quite a bit of property, see? I remember one time a man by the name of Tom Killoran came over to my dad. My dad was town treasurer, pay his taxes, and he refused to pay school tax. Wouldn't pay because he didn't have any children, see? Well, we explained to him, you know, that my dad explained to him that no matter whether he had any children or not, that he, if he didn't pay his taxes, they would confiscate his property, see? Well, finally he came across, you know. I remember coming over, and the taxes were very, very small. Used to get a lot of $5 gold pieces for paying taxes, you know. People had gold in those days. $5 gold piece, about the size of a penny. Maybe just a little bit larger than the penny. Yeah. Dad kept the tax money in a cigar box. And he'd pay, you know, out so much money to each school district. So much money would go to the county, but very, very, very little. I don't think there was any state tax. Yeah, it was quite a job.
What other responsibilities did he have as an official?
Well, collecting taxes, you know, he'd stay home. See, they start collecting taxes in January. In February. And then there was a period in there, I think a month of March or so on, if you didn't pay your taxes in those first 2 months, then the treasurer would have to go around with his horse and buggy and see each farmer, see? Before, you know, he sent in delinquencies, see? And then, of course, he had to have pay, you know, not only for the salary that was set by the town, but also to pay for his horses and buggies, see? So he'd have maybe a percent or so of tax money that you would have to pay extra if you didn't pay before March. Mm-hmm. I remember that. Yeah. Grandpa was a superintendent of schools, you know. Hired the teachers, gave them the examination. Dad was assessor one time too. Assessor, they'd go around and get the value of each property, because that was done in May. You know, they had to visit each farm, find out how many acres of land they had, how much was put in crop, how much was in wood, how many horses they had, how many cattle. Machinery, everything had to be put down on paper and given a value, see? Then that's what they use that, you know, to base their taxes on, see? On the value of the assessment roll. Yeah. They still have that. That's one thing that they've never given up. Those towns as the assessor, the state and the county, they've been trying hard to take that power away from the people, but they don't seem to be successful in doing it. Mm-hmm. I think eventually, though, it will come. There are some property now that is being assessed by a county or the state, like public utilities. If a public utility is built in a certain township, they don't get all the tax money. The assessors get some of it, but the state and the county also come in with their assessments. Well, I think eventually that it'll be a county assessing. See, the assessor has the value to set the assessor has the power to set the value. And if he may assess something way low, understand? And another assessor in another town may assess something way high. Mm-hmm. See? Yep. This way, if they have a county assessor, well, it would be the same all the way through, see? Like now, the city of Sturgeon Bay, Their property is assessed at I think it's 78% value, while in the town of Union over here, in Southern Door,